views and comments expressed on the Space Show by its guests, callers, and listeners belong to them. The Space Show and its hosts serve only as a platform and are not responsible for others' comments or views. All topics discussed on the Space Show are primarily for educational purposes.
We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other thing.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Tuesday Space Show program. I am your host, David Livingston. Thank you for tuning in tonight. And another interesting program. One of our favorite speakers is back with us. Guest is back with us. First, a little bit of announcements and business. Remember that our toll-free number, which is the preferred way of your contacting us and our guests during a live show, I might add, is 1-866-687-7223. There are no call screeners, so please be patient. Let the phone ring, and I'll bring you up on air as quickly as possible. Remember that I will hold you over the break or extend the time until the break if you're on a call, and we also answer the toll-free number during the break. So, again, 1-866-687-7223. Email, of course, drspace, D-R-S-P-A-C-E, at thespaceshow.com. And then you can also check in with us and post a question or a comment for our guest using the Space Show blog, which is part of our website. If you don't know how to do that, please email me at drspace@thespaceshow.com, and I will send you a very quick set of simple directions on how to use our blog during a live show. But again, do remember the preferred way of communicating with our guest during the live program is the toll-free line, 1-866-687-7223. Our website is thespaceshow.com, so we do have our very detailed, comprehensive newsletter there. It is center right. It's updated every Sunday after the Sunday Space Show program. And remember to scroll down on the website newsletter because it shows all of the programs that we have planned, and we're actually rapidly filling up second quarter 2018. I'm just amazed. Again, time flies. Everything we do is archived. You can listen right off of our website or easily download the program. By the way, we have an email newsletter that is very short, and it won't clutter your inbox up, I promise you. It goes out early Monday morning, 6 a.m. California time. If you would like to receive that email newsletter, please give me your email address, and I will add you to the list. On our website, thespaceshow.com, there is an upper left menu, and under support, you will find our logoware store for T-shirts and coffee mugs and things of that nature with the new Space Show logo on it. There is also a Listen Live button in that upper left menu. This tells you how to listen to live broadcasts, how to listen to archive programs on our website, and how to listen to podcast programs, including those that are being broadcast through Alexa, for those of you who want to use Alexa. If you have any questions, email me, drspace@thespaceshow.com. Also very important, and probably to me the most important, is center right on the website, which is the information on supporting the Space Show. So remember, we are a nonprofit, 501c3, with onegiantleapfoundation.org. And we are a listener-supported program. So if you like the content, please support us. And remember, if you're a U.S. federal taxpayer, you do get a tax deduction for your gift. And if you're a California taxpayer, you get a tax deduction for your gift at the state level, as we are a public benefit corporation in California. Visit our nonprofit parent, onegiantleapfoundation.org. And that is the website. You'll get a lot more information there. And in addition, you'll see a big Amazon box in the center of our homepage. Amazon has great programs for supporting nonprofits. One Giant Leap Foundation and Space Show are registered with Amazon. And if you click on that big button, that'll show you the two programs Amazon has for the Space Show. And you can just buy your ordinary stuff from Amazon like I do. And Amazon donates a portion of your purchase price to the Space Show if you do it through one of the two Amazon nonprofit programs. And the content is the same, the pricing is the same, and it's a great way to support organizations that you believe in. And we hope that includes the Space Show and One Giant Leap Foundation. In addition, please note that we are copyrighted and trademarked, and we do give everybody permission to download and share our programming and to do the same with listen live instructions that I detailed a few minutes ago. There are a couple of rules about that. Don't do anything commercial with any of our programs. Don't edit them, take clips, cuts, anything like that. Don't put them up on YouTube, your own personal website, or any other website. And then written transcripts are not permitted, even if they're for your own personal use. Remember, we do have a full copyright statement at the bottom of every spaceshow.com website page, and the same for every onegiantleapfoundation.org website page. If you have any questions, if you have a special need or a special want to do something with a program, please email me at drspace@thespaceshow.com, and we can see if we can work something out together. I appreciate your following those rules. We podcast, and we thank Andrew at gigadial.net for handling our podcast, and you'll find us in iTunes and other places on the net. And if you have any questions about our podcasting, please don't hesitate to email me, drspace@thespaceshow.com. And we also have big-time sponsors for the Space Show, although the sponsorship price is not big-time. So sponsors get their banner ad going across the website. You can see the sponsor ads if you click on thespaceshow.com. And you can change that banner ad as often as you like. Sponsors also get a 60-second or less promotional message read by me on every full-length Space Show program. On the shorter programs, I read the sponsor's name and thank them for their sponsorship. So tonight, being a regular-length Space Show program, I do want to thank the first segment sponsor. So here's one. Would you like to see space settlement occur within your lifetime? The Space Development Network is an online organization that allows you, the space advocate, to join together with others to advance the plan for space development. We need people with a wide variety of interests and skills. The network is free to join, so check it out at spacedevelopment.org. And then, in addition, the Space Foundation is a sponsor, and their 34th Space Symposium is just around the corner. And here you can make prosperous connections, hear timely and critical dialogue, and engage with the global space industry. It is April 16th through the 19th in Colorado Springs at the Broadmoor Hotel. Their website for one-stop shopping and everything is spacesymposium.org. And then the Integrated Space Plan is our sponsor. Remember, this is a highly detailed development chart showing the path to becoming a spacefaring race. See how technologies and destinations build upon one another. Explore hundreds of individual elements in more detail at thespaceplan.com. They have discussions, updates, ways for you to participate in interactive features and programs. You can buy your own full-color space plan. They have it as an academic version and as a regular version. And they're very inspiring. You can frame them. You can hang them on your wall or your door. And you'll like it, and it's very instructional and informative, too, especially if you have children. So, again, one-stop shopping, www.thespaceplan.com. And that brings me to our program tonight. So I am very happy to bring back Jim Funaro. He is the founder of the CONTACT Annual Conference, which brings together, actually, I think it's every 2 years now, which brings together space scientists, sci-fi writers, and artists to explore humanity's future. Their website for you to follow along with us tonight is www.contact-conference.com. .com.
.org.
Say it again, please, Jim.
.org.
Oh, .org.
What we usually use.
Okay. I've got .com on your bio. I have to change that.
Actually, I think both will work.
Both will work. Jim is a professor in anthropology at Cabrillo College. They have honored him with its highest award for teaching excellence. Publications demonstrating his research interests are Anthropologist, a Culture Designer for Off-World Colonies, and On the Cultural Impact of Extraterrestrial Contact. His career has emphasized the connections between the arts and the sciences. Besides his graduate degrees in anthropology, he has a B.A. cum laude in literature and is a published poet. He won the American Anthropological Association's 1997 prize for poetry with the Dancing Stones of Cavendish. And you can learn and follow along with us for the Contact Conference at their website, which again is contact-conference.org. And you'll get all the information because it's coming up pretty rapidly. I will let Jim tell you about it. Jim, tell us about Contact 2018. What is unique? What is special? What do you want us to know about it?
Well, David, it's nice to talk to you again and your audience. When I started Contact back in 1983, I thought maybe I'd do it for, 3 years or so and then pass it on. And here it is 30 years later, and we're still doing it and going strong. So this is our 30th meeting, and we've accumulated a pretty amazing record. And those of you who are interested, if you go on the web, to our website, if you click on About, you'll be able to see some historical material about how we got started and what we've evolved into. This year, we got a, as always, a blatantly diverse program. This proceeds from my own experience, I guess, as an anthropologist. Right from the beginning, Contact was meant to be interdisciplinary, and so we've tried to draw people, professionals and enthusiasts from many different fields to come together and bounce their ideas off one another, which is actually what the term contact means to me, is that striking together of ideas that produces both heat and light, and leads us toward, I think, a broader perspective on the human future.
So that it's not first contact with an alien or an E.T.?
Well, it's about humanity's future in the space age, and contact with extraterrestrials is one of the possibilities. So we certainly do talk about that possibility in some of the papers, and as you can see from our past programs, which are again all on the web, or even from the kind of diversity that we see at the 2018 conference, that some of them are about extraterrestrial contact, and some of them are about space program, some of them are about migration, planetary settlement, so on. So we draw from a pretty broad base of people who are interested in various aspects of the future.
So you're 30 years old this year, though, right?
Yeah, we are.
That seems like an important thing. What was Contact like? You're the founder of it. What was it like 30 years ago, the conference?
Well, it began as I was teaching at universities in anthropology. I found that it was very easy to use science fiction as a way of illustrating situations and scenarios that anthropologists face. And besides the fact that students would read them, actually, whereas texts were less interesting to them. But I figured that anthropologists study alien cultures, and science fiction writers create them, so we probably had a lot to talk about. So the original idea was connecting science fiction and anthropology, and I was using both in the classroom and in the new conference. One of the highlights, which I would like to talk about a little bit later in this show, is that originally a focus was basically a thought experiment in creation. And basically there were two teams. One team created an alien and its planet and its culture, and the other team, of course, they didn't talk to one another. They invented a future human team, and then on the last day, we put the two together in a kind of role-playing simulation. Again, I can refer to your audience. The website goes through a lot of those early years. But the idea of this experiment in creation was originally the main focus. Now it has become a sort of a sidebar, but we're still doing it because alien creation and contact creation is so much fun. And we do have a new iteration that I'll talk about sometime a little later. So when we started this out, I just had the idea of getting scientists, getting science fiction writers and anthropologists together. And when I was designing the class, I went up to visit a friend in Port Townsend, Washington, I was telling her about the class that I was teaching in science fiction and anthropology, and she said, "Do you want to meet Frank Herbert?" And my jaw dropped, and I said, "Yeah," and she had met him, and so a half hour later, we were sitting in Frank's living room talking about science fiction and anthropology, and I realized that this was more than just a class. This was a conference, and so I just started looking around at various venues in the space program and in among science fiction writers, and I found out I was getting cream of the crop right from the beginning. People were really excited about this science fiction anthropology connection. So I was real lucky. Had people like Larry Niven and C.J. Cherry and Jerry Pournelle and Poole Anderson that were immediately enthusiasts and supported contact right from the beginning. So we started out very well. And as the conference evolved, I was more and more interested in gaining some scientific credibility. And so we started recruiting people from NASA Ames, particularly, and SETI. They got excited about it. And so they brought along the space community to contact too, so that we've actually got pretty much what I wanted. The creative, speculative fun of science fiction writers and the scientific credibility of the space scientists.
And the advocates in between, right?
Yes.
The enthusiasts and the advocates in between.
Yeah, well, I try to keep contact fairly intimate in terms of numbers. I don't want it to get too large. Usually there are somewhere between 200 and 300 people there, and that's small enough so that people can actually interact with one another. And I use the phrase, everybody's a participant, whether you're a speaker or not. And you have the option of of sitting down with your favorite science fiction writer and having a beer or a cup of coffee and asking about their latest planet, or talk about the people that are running one of the Mars rover expeditions. So there's still a lot of that familial camaraderie that I find so important and intriguing. I think it's one of the reasons why people keep coming back.
You have your first email question for the evening. Todd, who always emails us, he's never called, is in San Diego. Mm-hmm. And he says, I'm curious about your historical perspective since you're 30 years old now. Science fiction writers back in the day when you started, as compared to today's crop of science fiction writers, compare and contrast?
Well, it's a great question. And science fiction has, of course, changed. I was lucky enough to be old enough to have interacted with that last generation that included people like Heinlein, who actually came to contact, and the crowd that was part of the Niven, Bornell, C.J. Cherry, Paul Anderson generation. Even then, I think there was a sort of dividing line within science fiction of sort of soft science fiction and hard science fiction. And most of the people that were interested in contact were people like the hard science fiction writers, that is, that were very much concerned about scientific authenticity in creating their worlds and aliens. I think that division is still there. The subject matter has become a lot more exciting in certain ways, a lot sexier in a lot of ways. The subjects have become, I think, much more in line with our millennial view of life in America today, as a kind of a milieu out of which these stories proceed. But we have people like Stan Robinson, who has done some of the finest science fiction writing in the last few decades, is Red, Green, and Blue Mars series is such a classic. And he is really, I think he considers himself a hard science fiction writer. And yet his stories have a lot of more personal, psychological data in their characters. I think in some ways, at least in certain writers, the character development has become more and more central to the point of the stories, and the science backing it up has been less important. But I think that in order to be considered a science fiction writer by other science fiction writers, you need to have science as a guide to the imagination, which has been a motto of ours for a long time.
Did Chelsea Bonestell ever come to any contact meetings?
No, he never did. But he was part of that generation.
No, I know.
I never did meet him. Some of the other folks in contact haven't met him.
Interesting. Incredible artist. You have a caller already. You ready for your call?
Sure.
We haven't really even gotten into talking about the conference yet. Here's your first call. Hi, caller. Welcome to the Space Show. And how are you? And who are you? And where are you?
This is Marshall out in Renfro, Oklahoma.
Okay.
Anyway, I love this topic, but me being a computer geek from like back almost before there was computers. One of the things that's always interested me is the evolution over time of the relationship of science fiction using computers. And it's kind of like, I remember the Blob, Steve McQueen movie, you know, absolutely nothing. And then you go up to Lost in Space and you have a stupid robot. And
hold on, Marshall. Come on. That robot was not stupid. It was just primitive compared to today.
You gotta watch your toes, you stepping on.
It drove a car. Remember, a little runaround in Forbidden Planet. It was the driver. So come on, it was cool, Robbie. You don't sell him short.
No, I apologize.
That's right.
Well. Let me finish off here, and then you get into some that are fairly recently. They're talking about supercomputers calculating and doing real-time translation and so on, like you get in the later Star Trek movies.
Well, computers have revolutionized not just science fiction, but, of course, our lives. And I remember before there were computers, especially the personal computers. The whole notion of computers and artificial intelligence has changed not only our lives but science fiction. We can see that stuff that is pretty much everyday stuff in science fiction today was unheard of when before computers. The idea of particularly to me, one of the fascinating parts to me, and I hope this is relevant to your question, is the change in the notion of the robots, started out being evil and then have become more and more friendly as we've gotten more and more cozy with our personal computers, and they've gone from being enemies to partners. It's pretty much, I think, the millennial generation, which is the generation that I am teaching now, they're in a totally different world than the students that, are pre-computers. And that the internet and the computer revolution has, I think, really changed what we would call the paradigm of reality. So we've been those old ideas about primitive computers have been left pretty high in the dust.
Yeah, and it kind of dates all science fiction by. What type of computer paradigm are you talking about at the time it was written or produced?
Yes, and that's really a nice point because you can, and I'm sure it can easily be done, you can monitor the evolution of the computer by taking a look at the evolution of science fiction during that same time.
Mm-hmm. That brings me to my real question is, who's the best computer guy sci-fi writer? Because I would like to read something by somebody who, is thinking a step beyond me.
You ought to come to Contact. I mean, there are people there that are much better able to answer that question than I am. I do read science fiction, but I'm pretty sporadic about it. I read it mostly for pleasure rather than information, though I must say I find it very inspiring to my work in both science and in art.
Why don't you get on a plane and come out there for it?
Quote unquote, I've got my job and I've got an R&D project, and maybe in 6 months or so I will have time and an airplane to actually go and do some things like that. But I'm kind of tied down now with a whole bunch of projects, plus the fact that the wind keeps kicking up to like 40 miles an hour, and my allergies just about make me want to move to California.
Oh, good. We need your tax revenue out here. And yes, absolutely. Move here and bring plenty of money to give to the state, because the state needs it.
Well, at that point, I'll let somebody else have some fun.
Thank you, Marshall.
Bye.
Bye. And listeners, the line is available if you would like to call us, and it is 1-866-687-7223. Email remains drspace@thespaceshow.com. Who are some of the speakers this year at Contact?
Well, we've got a number of symposia dedicated to particular topics, and others with just pretty much freewheeling. We're doing a particular set of papers on Friday afternoon that emphasizes Contact's continuing commitment to the interface between art and science. This is something that that we've been. This goes back to the beginnings of Contact.
Yeah.
As you could tell from my particular biography that David read off earlier, that my background is both in science and art, and I feel very comfortable working between the two and letting the two synergize. What I consider to be my scientific work and my artistic work and poetry. This is also true of the person that helped me start Contact, Joel Hagen, who is also an artist and a scientist, has his degree in anthropology. And basically does art and computer graphics. So this has always been, for me, a very fertile interaction that leads to creativity. And I've found happily in my dancing around between space scientists and writers a number of people who similarly value that interfertilization between the two, and that their art inspires their science, and their science inspires their art. Examples of this would be Penny Boston, who has recently become the director of the Astrobiology Institute at NASA Ames, and she's just a knockout poet, and she's very very clear about how the two inter-inspire, you might say, I guess, or mutually synergize. And she's going to be talking about that particular part of her life in her talk is called Chasing the Elusive, A Lifetime of the Hunt. Joel Hagen, who I just mentioned, also is primarily known as an artist, but he does a lot of science. And his talk is Ghosts Nudging the Mind and Hand. I'll be giving a talk, discussing the way in which science is a guide to the imagination for poetry, and how art is a way of something I can utilize creative speculation as a tool for research and science. In that same symposium, Kim Stanley Robinson will be talking about how science fiction works as an art form. And I've already said a little bit about Stan, but he's just a terrific guy and a great writer.
I see Bruce Damer is speaking again this year. He's a frequent guest on the space show.
Yes. Yeah, let me get to that in just a second. Let me finish up this one. We also have Chris Ford, who is works in film. He's with Pixar for many years, and he's just an incredible expert in computer graphics and imagery. He's won 3 Academy Awards. He'll be talking also about that interconnection. There are a lot of, I suppose you could say, wild card people too. Just, you know, they happen to be interested in something and they go with it. Another thing that, well, that shows is that the contact is a really good place for people to sunshine their new ideas. So it's a bunch of really bright professionals and enthusiasts that are the audience to test some of this stuff on. It's a very very intelligent group of people that come to contact, and Bruce is one of them. Bruce started with me about 15 years ago developing what we call the Contact Consortium. And he has gone on to become a pioneer in many fields, particularly having to do with the origins of life. And he just had an article published in Scientific American a few months ago on the hot spring origin of life, which he's going to talk about that hypothesis at Contact. Another example of a real specialty is Zach Zimmer, who is going to be talking about the first contact in science fiction and in Latin America, an analogy between those two interactions with two different people meeting each other, two different cultures meeting. He's an expert in Latin America. There are a number of talks that are going to circle around the subject of intercultural law and justice. Paper by Bob Tizer, anthropologist, going to be on meta law as a concept of achieving adjudication between different cultures, whether they happen to be on the planet or between planets. Seth Shostak is going to be talking about why haven't we found any other people to talk to? Seth is a marvelous speaker, and he always comes up with a great and creative discussion.
By the way, you have an email. You want me to interrupt you and read it?
Sure.
It's really a comment more than a question, but you may want to comment back. This is from Gus Frederick. For the previous caller, in my humble opinion, Isaac Asimov is the best robot sci-fi author. But regarding Robbie, and now he's going to depress me, but I'll read it anyway. Regarding Robbie, he was not in the TV series Lost in Space. I actually know that. But I did not know the name of the robot in Lost in Space, and this is where I'm really depressed, because who in the hell would give a robot this name? The droid was known as the Class B-9-M3, General Utility Non-Theorizing Environmental Control Robot, known simply as Robot. So, Gus, where in the hell did you get that name for the Lost in Space robot? I've not heard that before. I'm sure it comes from very reliable sources. Somebody had to be crazy to give it that name. I knew it was not Robbie, anyway, I appreciate the information, and then he says, great show, Doc, and I appreciate the compliments, and Any comments from you on what Gus is saying or on robot class B9M3, general utility, non-theorizing environmental control robot?
I don't really, but Gus has all kinds of esoteric information tucked inside his brain, as I have found out many times, and he happens to be on our board of directors for that particular reason. The subject of robots does fascinate me a great deal, and there are the evolution of American thought about robots has been amply exemplified as science fiction has developed. I think for me, one of the real highlights is that incredible scene at the end of Blade Runner, the movie, where Rutger Hauer actually makes up the last speech, but the poetry of is dying, this dying android who has a whole incredible history that will be lost like tears in rain. Marvelous. He made it up on the spot. But here we have the idea of a robot showing the bounty hunting human, what it really means to be human. And it's not the human that is the one that is the ideal. So for me, the whole evolution of the robot in science fiction is a fascinating subject.
Do you have any robots attending Contact?
I don't know. I mean, maybe we should have a Turing test.
Well, somebody might, you know, have built one and bring one,
or a drone
or something like that, you know, that could service as a robot.
We have had robots at Contact. And as a matter of fact, one of the people who is going to be talking, not about robots, although he could, is Dave Miller, who at one of our earlier contacts brought a team of students that were building and actually fighting robots at Contact. There have probably been other ones there, too, that I didn't notice.
Maybe they were traveling incognito or something, right?
Mm.
This is over 3 days, correct?
Yes.
Starting Friday afternoon and ending Sunday afternoon.
Right. And the Sunday afternoon program is the Cultures of the Imagination simulation, where we play out the Contact live on stage in front of the audience. So the audience gets to, first of all, learn who the players are, and then gets to watch the Contact simulation role play before your very eyes. And we've developed a number of interesting, I think, techniques for illustrating the scientific usefulness of the ad lib interaction. When anthropologists study people living in alien cultures in our own society, on our own planet, this could be within our own society as well. The contacts are unrehearsed, and that's one of the things I think that makes our simulation so exciting, is that you really don't know what's going to happen, and you don't know whether Contact is going to be successful or not. And there will be one played out this year as well. And I can talk about that if you want me to do that, but have you got, were you leading me somewhere else with your comment, Dave?
No, but we are at the halfway point, so I'm gonna break us right here. And right before we go to the break, I will say that Gus sent in the link for where he got the information on the robot, and it's a Wikipedia page, so anybody can go find it if you're so inclined and you want to read about Danger, Will Robinson. It's all right there. We are at the halfway point, and we are going to take our pause right here. Seldom we get to do it right on time. And we're going to be back in about 3 minutes. So don't go anywhere. We have much, much more to talk about regarding this year's contact and what's going on and related topics. So email for us is drspace, D-R-S-P-A-C-E, at thespaceshow.com. And then the phone number, if you would like to call, and again, we do answer the phone during the break, 1-866-687-7223. Don't go anywhere, and Jim and I are returning. Be right back.
The Space Show thanks its listeners for their generous support. The Space Show now joins forces with the One Giant Leap Foundation to further advance space education and the establishment of a spacefaring society and culture in America and the world. One Giant Leap Foundation is a tax-exempt organization with the purpose of advancing space education and development along with the Space Show. Your support of the Space Show and One Giant Leap Foundation helps get the word out as to why space is so essential and important to us all. So join with us by going to www.thespaceshow.com and clicking on the Support the Space Show button. Your contribution will help the Space Show and One Giant Leap Foundation in continuing its work and bringing you the programming you want free of charge on a continued basis. And remember, your gift to the Space Show is tax deductible. The Space Show thanks its listeners for their generous support. The Space Show now joins forces with the One Giant Leap Foundation to further advance space education and the establishment of a spacefaring society and culture in America and the world. One Giant Leap Foundation is a tax-exempt organization with the purpose of advancing space education and development along with the Space Show. Your support of the Space Show and One Giant Leap Foundation helps get the word out as to why space is so essential and important to us all. So join with us by going to www.thespaceshow.com and clicking on the Support the Space Show button. Your contribution will help the Space Show and One Giant Leap Foundation in continuing its work and bringing you the programming you want free of charge on a continued basis. And remember, your gift to the Space Show is tax deductible. The Space Show thanks its listeners and sponsors for their support. Having a spacefaring society and culture is not only important, it's crucial for humanity as a whole. It is also a large undertaking for everyone involved in this mission, and the Space Show is no exception. So join with us by clicking on the Support the Space Show button at www.thespaceshow.com. Please make your tax-deductible contribution, which will help us in continuing to bring you our programming and services, all free of charge. The Space Show also has available opportunities for sponsorship on air, the archived programs, the newsletter, and the website. For information, contact Dr. Livingston at drspace@thespaceshow.com or area code 415-435-6018. Again, The Space Show thanks you for listening and for your support.
I'm Dr. David Livingston, creator and host of The Space Show, and I would like to share my vision with you for not only this radio program, but for space development. Space should be like any other place we choose to visit, work in, or call our home. It should be just another destination, like Tahiti, Hawaii, or any place available to us right now on Earth. When this vision becomes reality, we will be spacefaring in our culture, our economy, our society, and in our lives. Our world will be vastly improved by countless space-related benefits, transforming our lives both in space and right here on Earth. And the Space Show is helping to make this vision a global reality. Welcome back, everybody, and we're doing part two of our program on the Contact Conference coming up, and our guest is the founder of that event, Jim Funaro, and we have a couple of sponsors for the second segment. Orbital ATK is a global leader in aerospace and defense technologies and the partner you can count on for advanced, reliable space propulsion systems for space exploration, commercial ventures, and defense. The American Institute of Aeronautics and Astronautics, AIAA, is our sponsor, and we're happy to have them. They're the world's largest aerospace pro society. They have about 30,000 individual members, 88 countries, 95 corporate members, and their membership helps shape the future of aerospace every day. They have five conferences or events a year, great networking, great organization. Check them out at AIAA.org. And then Celestis is our sponsor, and they are still the only proven Memorial spaceflight service in the world. They have a really robust schedule for 2018, five launches. So their first launch is going to be in New Mexico, suborbital with Up Aerospace. And that's going to be next month. And then they have their seventh Earth orbital mission called the Heritage Flight, mid-year from the Cape, and that's going to be on the General Atomics OTB satellite, which is launched by Falcon Heavy. So that'll be orbital. Their second lunar mission, Luna 2, fourth quarter, is going to launch from New Zealand, Mahia, New Zealand. This is the Moon Express rocket going to the moon. On the new Electron rocket by Rocket Labs. And as I've said before, my mom and dogs are on that flight, so that rocket better work because they've already crashed one time on a Falcon 1 into the deep, 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 deep blue Pacific Ocean. They don't need another water trip. They need to go to the moon. So, Electron, you better work. We're pulling for you. And then they have the eighth orbital mission, the Horizon flight, fourth quarter, from Vandenberg, that's on a Falcon 9. And then they have their Voyager mission. This is an Enterprise flight. It'll launch fourth quarter, and we'll learn more about that later this month. Their website, Celestis.com. Tell them you heard about them on the Space Show and that Dr. Space really loves these guys. I know that's weird to say about a funeral company, that you really like them, but they're wonderful people, and that's one of the best businesses I have ever in my life dealt with. So that is Celestis.com. And Jim Funaro is our guest. And Jim, you have a really interesting keynote speaker for this year's Contact event. So tell us about the keynote talk, when it is, and who you landed for this, because it's a real coup and a really interesting speaker you've got coming on board.
Yes, he is. We're very excited about it. This is Dr. Nathalie Cabral. She is one of the stars of the new generation at SETI and NASA, and you'll be hearing a lot about her work over the next few years. She's a planetary scientist, and her passion is the search for life, both on-world and off-world. She's a very interesting lady. She's an adventurer. One of her proudest titles is she holds the world's record for diving at high altitudes. More on that in just a minute. She's an explorer, and she is, like many people at Contact, a lover of extremophiles, which probably most of your audience knows, but these are life forms, mostly microbial, but they don't have to be.
On Mars, right, under the ground in Mars, right? That's where they are, correct?
Well, that's what the NASA folks think, hope. But she's, extremophiles are those organisms that live at the real margins or limits of what we think of as habitability. So they love extremes, and so do most people at contact. That's probably one of the reasons they're there. She was recruited to NASA by Chris McKay, who some of our contact folks know very well as Dr. Mars, one of NASA Ames' most well-known scientists. She not only has been part of the Astrobiology Institute and now is specifically at SETI as the director of the Sagan Center for the Study of Life in the Universe. So that's her thing. Right now, her major research project, which she probably will be talking about to some degree, is a Lake Lander project in the Andes in Chile. She's in a little canyon at 9,000 feet, and she's using this as an analog for eventually landing and roving on Mars and perhaps Titan and Enceladus. So the idea is to find an environment that is very extreme on this planet and use it as a sort of test site for designing our search throughout the solar system.
What day is her keynote speech?
That's Saturday night after the banquet.
Okay. You have a caller patiently waiting. You want to take the call?
Sure.
Hi, caller. Welcome to the Space Show. Who are you and where are you, please?
Oh, this is John in Fort Worth.
Hi, John in Fort Worth. How are you tonight?
Okay. Of course, science fiction has such a vast possibilities. There's all kinds of different things. But I guess I grew up in a period of the space race, and so I've been sort of interested in the idea, you know, over the time of, well, I guess basically it kind of kicks off seriously right after World War II with the V-2 rocket showing the feasibility of real space flight, you know,
mm-hmm.
and the realistic, you know, kind of the Heinlein type books and I got into Niven and all that, yeah. And the thing is, we were in a period of very rapid technological progress, at least in those fields, you know, whereas maybe we underestimated computers in some ways and maybe underestimated genetics, of course. But since we're kind of, to me, it seems like we're kind of plateauing in technology. How's that affecting science fiction of the present period? I've read a few things in the last few years on that, but I've not been as active in reading science fiction as I used to be.
It's a great lead-in, John. Thank you. It's gotten to the place where real technology is starting to outrun science fiction. I think to some degree some of the science fiction writers have countered that with simply going farther and farther into the future for the scenarios for their stories. The technology of artificial intelligence and also specifically in medical science has just blown our minds about what's possible. And I think that a lot of science fiction writers have been utilizing that awesome nature of our technological change to extrapolate even farther into the future. One of my favorite recent ones is Kim Stanley Robinson's it's called, I think it's 2312, I believe it's just a number, but it's far into our future and has some of the most exciting ways of thinking about how change might occur. And I'd If you're interested, I would recommend that one as a start to see how far ahead some of the science fiction writers have projected what's going on now.
Certainly in the areas of computers and artificial intelligence and biology, I think medical, that genetics, all that is where the real, it seems like the real advancement is happening in this present period, whereas things like space technology is kind of stagnant at the moment. You know, it's being commercialized and redeveloped by commercial companies, maybe more economically, you know, but it's the same basic thing in principle, you know.
Nice point. And what we're saying is that space technology, especially as illustrated in science fiction, is not going at the same rate that real change in our own lives is happening. And there are only, you know, there are so many systems for space propulsion and faster than light travel, all that stuff. It hasn't captured, I think, the imagination of people as much as some of the real things that are happening in our lives or around us now. What really scares me is some of the genetic modification techniques, that, like CRISPR, for example, where we essentially are able to play God without any rules. There aren't the kinds of checks and balances built into our technological culture that are built into the process of evolution. We're sort of playing God without the knowledge that we need. I'm at a loss to really say. I think what's happening is what I'm seeing in science fiction is that they're taking off not so much from space technology, but from things like medical technology and DNA studies, and projecting that into the future instead of simply coming up with new methods of propulsion, for example.
I guess that has a possibility of either optimistic type developments or very horrifyingly scary developments, either way, right?
Human beings have shown themselves to be capable of making incredible mistakes.
it's fascinating. Well, I just thought I'd call in and discuss that with you a little bit. Interesting subjects.
Yeah, and the book, by the way, is titled 2312.
I just got there on Wikipedia there. I see it, yeah.
Yeah, and it's
got a whole list of...
It's at various prices on Amazon in various formats, so people that are interested can go check it out.
Okay.
And he also, by the way...
Anybody else calls in, unless you...
Jim, do these authors bring their books and autograph them at Contact?
Yes.
I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah.
Did ask you about that. So Kim might have the book there and be able to autograph for it.
Kim will definitely be there. The last contact I got Larry and Andy Weir and Kim Stanley Robinson to sign books, and it was wonderful.
Cool.
It actually was like old times.
Is Andy going to be there this time?
No, Andy will not be able to be there. And Larry is not going to be there either. He was going to be there and then had to cancel. But Stan will be there for sure.
Okay. John, anything else from you? I think he got off. Listeners, first of all, John, thank you for your call. The toll-free number is available for others who want to use it. There is plenty of time for that. 1-866-687-7223, and then email, of course, drspace@thespaceshow.com. Tell us some more about what you've got planned Are all of the meals there with everybody? Like, is it a self-contained conference? You do lunches with the group and things like that?
There is a restaurant in the hotel. It's at the Domain,
right,
in Sunnyvale, and people usually eat there. Sometimes we get together, groups get together, go out for lunch and come back. Because I'm really interested in fun and conviviality, I usually leave an hour and a half for lunch, so people can kind of interact. There are probably going to be a couple of breaks in there too, but there's also plenty of time outside the paper sessions themselves for people to interact, because that's the way it's supposed to be. This is supposed to be working and playing together for 3 days.
Yeah, it's a great hotel venue. I've been to conferences there. Why don't you tell, since we're on the hotel, why don't you spend a couple of minutes and tell us about the registration, the logistics, you know, the bread and butter for the event?
Well, there is a bar. That's important to a lot of the people that contact. The paper sessions all take place in the same room, so it's just set up for the whole conference. There is an art show and an art get together, a gathering, a wine tasting, I believe, in the art gallery when it opens on Friday. So basically the idea is there are papers through most of the day, a long lunch, and afterwards there's usually some kind of social event where people can interact after the programming. There's a hospitality suite with food and beverages, and that's true of both Friday. Saturday, after the programming, is the banquet, and you have to buy into that if you want to. And then the keynote speaker follows the banquet, and then there's another gathering in the hospitality suite afterwards. And then Sunday, there's a morning program, and then a long lunch, and the Cultures of the Imagination simulation for the afternoon, usually starting about 1 and going till around 3 or 4.
How do you register for the conference, and are there student fees? Tell us a little bit about the registration. Is it all online?
Most people just go to the registration link online, and there are two parts to the registration process. One is simply giving information to the registrar so that we can get in touch with you if we need to for any reason, and it's, of course, private. And then you can pay. There are a number of options for payment, and you can pay with either PayPal or your personal credit card. So it's all pretty well laid out on the registration page. David, you and I were talking about a special registration rate for the space show folks, and I think that we can handle that by simply saying that if you hear about contact on this program, you can go to the registration page, and even though the early bird discount price of $90 supposedly expired the 1st of March, you can click on that and no bright lights will come on, or the cops will come if you register for $90 after that day because you heard about it on the space show. Does that sound right?
Yeah, sounds fine. So Space Show listeners, you can still get in at the early bird rate by listening to this show. Otherwise, you'll pay about $50 more. What about the hotel? Is there still room at the hotel for people? How does that work?
I am not sure about that. We have a block, and I don't think it's filled up yet. So if your listeners want to, they should they should call the hotel right away. Follow the instructions. On the website, there's on the main page,
for the Domain Hotel in Sunnyvale.
Right. If you click on the link on the home page, which is larger than the other ones, and it lights up blue, it says, click here for complete 2018 conference information. You click on that, there's a venue hotel information page, and that gives you the conference rate and the phone number to call. And you should mention contact when you call the hotel to get the rate.
Okay. What are these special sessions that you have at the event?
Well, I've talked about some of them. I just haven't put them in that order. One session is the Contact Science and Art Symposium, which I did discuss earlier in the show. There's also an anniversary session. The person that I dedicated the conference to back when it started was a friend of mine and one of the only two geniuses that I ever met. His name is Gregory Bateson. And Bateson was a kind of a scholar of all fields. He was just really a special guy. And so though he died before the first contact, I still dedicated the conference to him for the first few years. And just because I was so impressed with him as an innovative thinker in so many different fields. And his daughter, Nora, who I met when she was just a child, has created an organization called the International Bateson Institute. And so I'm devoting two sessions to her, one to the award-winning film that she made called Ecology of the Mind, which was inspired by many of Gregory's discoveries, scientific discoveries. And that will be shown on Friday night. And then on Saturday afternoon, she is going to be streaming in remote from Sweden for a sort of an anniversary, which I'm calling the Bateson Legacy. And she's going to talk about her father's work and her work as a kind of it makes perfect sense in that this is the 30th anniversary of the conference. And so this is a sort of a special way that seems to me to honor my old friend and to give a space to his legacy as put forth by his daughter, Laura.
So she's not physically there. She's in Sweden and coming.
Yes, she'll be. Actually, that's going to be, we're going to have our first remote presentation. So it'll be an interesting experience for Contact as well as for the audience.
Okay, and then you've got something called The Ranger and the Astronaut. What is that?
That has a group of people from NASA and the National Park Service that are going to be talking about the connection between those two agencies of our government that have worked together, surprisingly enough, at different times, so that one of the speakers, this is going to be on the Friday morning, Harry Butowski, who is a National Park Service historian, and Jay Cole, who is an expert on science policy and particularly interested in the Green Bank array, radio astronomy array. And then Chris McKay is going to be talking about some of the implications of Earth as a training ground for search for life elsewhere. And it's going to connect to those two earlier talks. So it's a group of three speakers that have a specific interest in the connection between NASA and the National Park Service. Then,
you have CODI 2018. What is that?
Well, that's our Cultures of the Imagination simulation.
Okay.
That, as I said earlier in the program, was the highlight originally around which the early contacts were built. And it was a thought experiment where one team creates an alien and his culture, and the other creates a future human team, and then we put them together in an unrehearsed scenario. Over the years, we have that's really changed a lot in terms of who participated. For 10 years, we had high school teams coming and doing it. And then what happened is a couple of years ago, some of the newer members of Contact, particularly board members, who had not been involved in the early evolution of Contact, were really excited about what we did. And so we got together up at Mike Sims, who's going to be talking. He's an ex-NASA scientist and robotics expert. But he was at Ames then, and we did a conference. This was back in the days when teleconferencing was a new thing. And we brought our new board members in, so they could get the experience, and they got so excited about it. We called it CODI for us, they created, there was a world with two alien life forms on it, and they went through the whole process of creating the ecology, and the sort of Australopithecine stage of these creatures as they evolved, the Ur creatures, and they met, they both inhabited different ecologies on the same planet, eventually met and formed a kind of a symbiosis. So these two teams, which are called in the scenario Team Alpha and Team Omega, are two separate species that had a joint origin on the same planet, are now occupying two planets in their planet in their solar system, and they have come to a rather complex way of interrelating to one another culturally. And the new thing that's going to be happening is that a rogue planet is sighted. And it's traveling in the direction of our two teams. The solar system, by the way, happens to be Gliese 667. It's a triple star system, fairly complex system. And so we have representatives of the two alien teams, and they are now going to encounter a rogue planet. Well, rogue planets are really interesting phenomena. They're not well known. They're planets have been ejected for one reason or another from their star system of birth, and they spin through space without a without a sun, maybe captured by other suns. And so it's on its way toward our two teams. And so at contact, each team will explain to the audience sort of where they are in their own development. And then the rogue planet will be encountered, and we'll see what happens. If there's sentient life on that planet, which is possible, we'll have contact between our two original alien teams and a new one, maybe. So that's what the audience is going to see developing, evolving at the conference, and the climax will be on Sunday afternoon when you get to watch that unrehearsed connection.
We'd kind of be remiss, in my opinion, if I didn't at least ask you to mention the memorials. These are pretty important people that have passed away over recent years. I'm looking at Jerry Pinnell in particular, who is the only one I personally knew. Do you have an actual memorial service, or what do you plan on doing?
Well, you know, it's been a little scary over the years to see. You know, every year I have to write more eulogies of contact veterans who have given so much to our organization and conference voluntarily. And now I have to talk about what they meant to contact. And it's indeed, it makes you think, you might say. But, this year, what I plan to do is there'll be a mention in the program, picture and a blurb for each of these folks. And then what I anticipate is that that on Friday night, let's see what I have scheduled here. There'll be a sort of a celebration of life for these people, and folks who are attending will get up and talk about their experiences with that person. The people involved here are Jerry Pornell, who probably most of you remember, and I have written. Jerry and I were well known for being at opposite political poles, and our screaming debates on the balconies outside the hotel rooms at contact conferences were legendary, but we got along because we both believed in contact. Another very old friend of mine from graduate school days is Phil DeVita, who was an anthropologist at SUNY Plattsburgh in New York. Lita Jackson, who was instrumental in founding the L5 Society, and Ursula Le Guin, who has been a friend of mine for many years and one of the people who encouraged me at the beginning, along with Frank Herbert, to activate the contact conference. And she was a remarkable lady, and I invited her many times to contact, and she never came, but it was always not until the end of her note, which was so elegantly put, that I realized she said she wasn't going to make it. But she was just a real motivator for me. And Nancy Zietema, who was originally one of my students and became one of the biggest enthusiasts in our Cultures of the Imagination series over the years. So that's what the memorials are going to be about. I expect that it will be mostly a typical kind of thing where people just speak their little piece.
Well, of course, my good friend who was instrumental and who always was there has been gone for many, many years, but I still remember him, and that is Al Harrison, of course.
Yeah, and we did Al last year, last conference. And as a matter of fact, let me see. There's, if you, I'm talking about the web page here. If you go to the About page, click at the top, there's a link under what is contact called Remembrances, and you will be able to see the eulogy for Al there. So that's just for you, David, if you're interested.
Yeah, I am very interested. Very great person, good friend. He was on the space show many times, and really helpful in the early years, and he's one I still miss today. So.
Oh, yeah, well, we all do. The way that I met him was he had just finished his book, Living Aloft, and was an advisor at NASA, and I found out his name just through that, and I was putting on a conference, an anthropology session at the Association of Applied Anthropologists that had to do with designing a human habitat in space. And I just called up Al, and he didn't know me from Adam, you know, and I just told him what I was interested in, made my pitch, and he said, yeah, I'll go with you. He was over in Davis, and it was in Reno, so I just picked him up on the way, and we've been fast friends ever since. And he was a very strong supporter of Contact.
Yeah, great guy. I used to meet him in conferences in Las Vegas, and he was a hoot to pal around with. He was a UC psychology professor at UC
right.
Davis. Fabulous guy. But anyway, life moves on, as they say, right?
Yep.
We're coming close to the end of our program. What do you want listeners to know about this year's Contact Conference, other than they get the early bird if they register and mention the space show?
I want them to come and enjoy what we put on. Every year, as you know, we put on an incredible show with incredible people, and we'd like all of your listeners to come to the conference and participate with us and work and play together. Come and meet us. It's a great show.
Networking, people are friendly. The superstars are there. They're available to approach and to talk with and stuff like that.
At Contact?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's what it's all about. That's another meaning of Contact. Is for people to get together and enjoy themselves. I really, you know, I don't get involved in stuff that isn't fun, whether it's teaching or doing conferences or whatever, or doing the space show. You know, I'm interested in enjoying myself and creating, to the degree that's possible, an environment for people to also have fun with me.
Is there? I've got a note from Jack, and Jack is in Las Vegas, and he says I'm a college student, a senior. Do you have a student rate? You didn't mention that.
I fought for years to remain the low rate of I think it was like $30, and I was overruled by the board, so that the student rate is the same as the senior rate, and that's $90.
Or the same as the early bird rate.
Right, that's correct.
Well, inflation has caught up with you, right?
Yeah, but you know what? I had to give a paper at the American Anthropological Association meeting a couple of years ago, and I had to pay $400 just to give the talk, which was invited. and then it was, you know, registration on top of that. So $90 is pretty reasonable for a conference with this caliber of presenters.
And the dates for this year's conference, April?
April 6th to 8th.
In Sunnyvale at the Domain Hotel.
Right. And they can click on that main button on our homepage, and they have a whole list of links dealing with different things, including, by the way, you can connect with us on Facebook, too. Gus, as a matter of fact, is our Facebook manager.
Yeah, I found that out today. listen, as always, it will be a great event. And, you know, I often get speakers for the space show, guests for the space show from your speaker list because you have great people coming. And I will plan on doing that again this year after the event. So you're a great resource for me.
Thank you, David. And if your plans change, we'd love to see you at the conference.
Well, I would love to. We'll see how I finish dealing with my move, which has been far different and far harder for me than I ever expected. But I would like to come because the times I've been, and I've been to several of them, they are really a lot of fun, and I enjoyed them. I think the last one I was at was when Pete Warden was at NASA, and he was still allowing NASA to host some of these conferences, and then he got stomped on for that, and NASA doesn't host them over there at Ames anymore. But they were a lot of fun at Ames, too. So
yeah, I still think we should be meeting back at Ames.
Well, I don't think they do that anymore, do they?
Well, no. What they did was they contracted it out, and then it didn't work.
Absolutely. But when it, you know, it was small, it was intimate, it was warm, the parking was great. You know, there are places to stay around Ames that are decent. It's not cohesive like the Domain Hotel where people can be at one place. But I remember they brought pizzas in from Costco, I think, for lunch one day. I mean,
yeah.
it was really warm and cozy place. It was great. And I miss
it. And there were rooms over at the Ames Lodge that were big enough for budgets of people to get together after hours.
Yeah, and they had a Naval Reserve Lodge that's there on...
it's called the Ames Lodge.
Or something like, and then across
the
freeway.
Yeah, $50 a night.
Yeah, and then across the freeway, they've got a couple of traditional hotels like the Ramada or something like
right.
that. So, but Ames was a cozy, warm, really great place, and if you wanted to walk down to sort of the basics change, for lack of a better terminology, they had sandwiches and food there, too.
Mm-hmm.
But I certainly liked being at Ames for a lot of different events. I'm sorry they don't do that anymore.
Yeah, I am too. And for me, it's a natural home for contact.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I agree with you completely. I had a good room for it and everything. Listen, I appreciate your being back with us. And I know it'll be a great event. And I look forward to hearing about it after the event as well. And we will stay in touch for sure. And they're every 2 years now, correct?
Right. Are we still on the air, by the way?
Yeah, we're still on the air.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's it, listeners. I want to thank Jim Funaro, those of you who called the show, those of you who emailed. If you go to contact, let us know on an open line show.
Come and see me. Say hello.
Come and see him, but then also call in on an open line show and let us know how it was. We want to hear your feedback, okay? And everybody...
And like us on Facebook and share the information.
Okay, yeah, I'm not as a big Facebook person, but absolutely, go do that. What is your Facebook page?
There's a link right on our homepage.
For Facebook, okay.
And also, there's a link, there are a couple of links on that... The second page.
So easy to get to.
Yeah.
All right, listeners, and listen, everybody, Hotel Mars is tomorrow, although it's pre-recorded, but Mark Whittington is talking SLS stuff with us. And then Friday, oh, boy, what a treat. John Charles is with us. He just retired from NASA, Human Spaceflight Division, and a bunch of other divisions. 32-year career at NASA, and he is our guest, Dr. John B. Charles, on Friday on the Space Show, a program you definitely want to hear. And then the three amigos of Juris, Logan, and Adamo, and boy, have our emails been sparking all week about all sorts of topics for a marathon discussion on Sunday. So it's going to be a great week. It has been a great week on the Space Show with Jim, and we move forward. So everybody, keep looking up, keep it safe, and go to contact. And we thank Jim for being with us and talking with us about it tonight. Good night, everyone.
David and your audience.
Yeah, and good night, everyone, from Jim, David, and the Space Show.